Indeed, we are here live on the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday. A very nice day in the city. You know, all through the winter, we complained about the cold. Well, people are complaining about the heat now. So, but it's the Midwest. Things can change on a dime. As you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. We've got two well-known names of the theater scene with us here today. John Rensenhouse is with us. Boy, he has, if I read all of his credits,
that would be the show.
He has a lot, but no. he is the acting managing director, still are.
No, I'm no longer the acting managing director. I'm the chairman of the artistic committee of Kansas City Actors Theater.
That sounds even better.
Oh, the chairman, yes. Chairman John, that's what I make them call
John,
me.
I'll abbreviate, but you know, John actually went to college on a golf scholarship, somehow got over into theater. I read a lot.
Wow.
I do extensive reading.
John's been around.
He was in one of those daytime dramas, The Edge of Night.
Correct.
He played a bad man doing bad things.
Exactly, yes.
But he has a ton of theater experience. A lot of Shakespeare. You do the Shakespeare Festival almost every summer.
Almost every summer. I'm not going to be doing it this summer.
What are they
going to
do without you?
Oh, they'll do just fine without me, Michael. They will do just fine. They're doing Much Ado About Nothing, and it's going to be great.
Boy, he has been with the Rep, Actors Theater, I'm sure the Unicorn.
Yes, the Unicorn, the New Theater.
And regionally, at places...
Yeah, I've worked a lot at the Repertory Theater of St. Louis. Currently, I work quite a bit at the Resident Ensemble Players in Newark, Delaware. I've, you know, Cincinnati, California, Milwaukee. Yeah,
this is the actor's life, though.
They yes.
do a lot of that.
Hey ho, yes. Somebody, when I'm grumbling, I have a friend who will always say to me, "Well, you wanted a life in the theater, and now you got it.
And now you have it." Well, welcome back.
Thank you. It's always nice to have you.
Katie Carl is with us. Well, I have to mention it. I was so impressed. You did Lucky Duck at the Coterie here locally. It then traveled all the way to Off-Broadway at the new Victory Theater in New York.
Did you go to New York with that?
Yes, I played Millicent Mallard, one of my finer moments, I think. Yes. Off-Broadway.
Yeah. Is that the only time you've played in New York?
Yep, that's the only time. One and only time.
Many more in the offing?
Yep, many more in the offhand. Many other places and certainly around town here, yeah.
Katie has appeared at the new theater. Well, John has also appeared at the new theater. A musical theater, Heritage, the one I can't pronounce, Okoboji.
Okoboji Summer Theater, yeah.
Right. The Rep, the Unicorn, Quality Hill, EGADS, where she probably got the runaround from Kevin Eubank.
Oh, yeah, he did. He's
quite an energetic director.
Him and Barb, really.
People are constantly moving around. They never settle in one place. Regional theater as well.
I've started to work out at North Coast Repertory Theater in California. I've done a couple shows out there, but yeah, I have a small reach, but it's very far actually. So,
well, thank you also for being with us.
Thank you
once again. Of course, they are doing the Kansas City Actors Theater production of Skylight. It opens on May the 23rd and runs through June the 10th. It's at the theater in Union Station.
So City Stage.
The City Stage Theater in Union Station. And it'll run through June the 10th. The number to call for more information, 816-235-6222. And also on the web at kcactors.org. Welcome both of you. It sounds like an interesting play as I read about it in an older man, a younger woman. The things that brought them together and the things that pushed them apart.
Yeah, it's by David Hare, a very renowned British playwright, and it's won many awards. It was first done in the early 90s, but recently had a notable revival in New York on Broadway, starring Bill Nighy and Carey Mulligan, won the Tony Award for Best Revival of a Play. So this play has an excellent pedigree, and indeed, it's a smart, funny, involving, romantic, infuriating kind of play. Yes.
Yeah. Katie's part of it. You're, I guess, the younger woman. John is the older.
Yes,
man.
That is
yes,
correct.
I am the younger, if we can just emphasize, woman, and John is the older man. So, yeah. I played Kira Hollis in the show, and these characters are really just lovely. And I think that, you know, Bill Nye has really said some lovely things about this play, just about leaving you. It's totally accessible. It's accessible to everyone. And from Edward, who shows up at the beginning and end of the play, to Tom, to Kira, each of these characters in a multitude of different ways is accessible to each one of us. And I'm not just talking us here who have the pleasure of playing them, but anyone who gets to see the play as well.
Yeah, you feel like you really get to know these people over mm-hmm. the course of the evening. It's 2 hours long, so, mm-hmm. so it's not a 4 hours long day's journey into night. It moves along pretty well. But since it's basically Katie and I for most of the play, mm-hmm. and you really get to know these people, and you go back and forth on, well, he done her wrong,
yeah,
or no,
right,
she done him wrong.
And, yeah,
they're trying to. Well, he comes to try and get back together with her. They had an affair mm-hmm. Some time ago, and circumstances have changed, mm-hmm. and he feels kind of lost without her and wants to get her back.
Yeah, and throughout the evening, we kind of figure out more about these two, their history, what brought them together, what tore them apart, and, you know, what ultimately happens to them.
Their relationships are strange in that way, aren't they? You never know what's going to happen, and often things that seemed so serious at the time, mm-hmm. years later, don't seem that serious at all.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and they have very different world views. She, being the younger one, is a bit more idealistic mm-hmm. and committed to changing the world, and he is a businessman. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just loves to... He's a restaurateur. He runs restaurants, but his company has been successful enough to go public. It's been bought out, and he has tons of restaurants all over the world now, mm-hmm. and he's very much a businessman. I mean, you've got a red person and a blue person
together. Well, and also Hare has commented about how since the play at its inception has continued to be timely without many or any at all updates. I think we did very little, if any, updates to the play.
We've added cell phones.
We've added cell phones. That's about it.
Hard to get around that.
Yeah. Not that there really even is many mentions of phones or telephones or technology or anything like that.
Right.
But that both of these people represent not only two different world views and political views and social views in that way, but they also understand and have come from Tom, although, you know, an older, successful, I dare say more conservative businessman, has come from a lowly and working class upbringing, really bring yourself
that
up by your own bootstraps. And then Kira, who is currently, you know, the more socialistic, the more socially involved, the one who cares about the world and the community, was brought up in a richer and, you know, more affluent environment. So,
well, there certainly are a lot of reason there for there to be conflict. What, I don't want to give anything away about the plot, but what brought them together in the first place?
Are you asking that as a question?
Well, I suppose.
Well, no, she came to, she moved to London, and we needed a waitress at our restaurant, and she came in, and before you know it, was managing the place.
Yeah, one fateful night, she mentions in the play meeting Tom and Alice and feeling that something was special about that night. She belonged with them at the restaurant with that family, and that's kind of where she stayed after getting off the bus in London.
Well, certainly different backgrounds and all of that, but they are... Go ahead.
Well, no, and speaking of the restaurant angle, Katie does a phenomenal job throughout the play because she has to cook spaghetti dinner while doing all this dialogue while doing the play. But she's I sort of barge in on her while she's trying to fix her dinner at home one evening, and she goes on and prepares her dinner, so there's a lot of chopping.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have, you know, a live stove and everything. There's going to be live cooking on stage.
Real vegetables, the very smelly kind, too. We're involving onions, garlic, so it will be an aromatic experience.
Sensorama.
Now, this sounds very exciting. Have you ever done anything quite like that before?
No, not at all. Not at all. With a live preparation of a meal on stage, which is something that this play has become famous for. It's certainly a notable aspect of the play. And so far, I've worked with potatoes and water. So this week we begin with the onions, the live stove, the garlic, the tomatoes, all that stuff.
Well, you've probably cooked in real life.
Right. And that's the thing we always have to remember about theater is that it's like, you know what? You've spoken to people and cooked before once upon a time. So maybe you could do it again. Oddly enough, it makes it so much harder when people are just watching you, though. So we'll see.
Does it become a part of you associate that line with doing this?
Absolutely. This thing? Just like I think any sort of action or prop matter in a play, the way Kira handles, and even having to do with the restaurant aspect, these people, I was thinking about this last night, in fact, have kind of started and gathered around food and the home and the kitchen and the restaurants. It's been a big part of their relationship since they met each other, and it is until you exit at the very end. So it's just kind of a funny and interesting aspect of this play, and something, again, people can certainly relate to. I guess we'll just see. We'll see how it all pans out. So
the only thing that would make it better, the audience gets sample to, after.
We'll just hope it's edible. Let's just hope for that.
Well, I'm sure it would be fine. We're speaking with Katie Carl and John Rensenhaus, two of the performers in the Kansas City Actors Theater production of Skylight. It opens on May the 23rd, and it will run through June the 10th. Basically, a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, not the first weekend, because they're taking Sunday off that first weekend. Mm-hmm. Then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's a fairly involved run, although not as long as the dinner theaters that you both worked at are.
No, I think they have the longest run in town, longest, for sure. Currently.
12 weeks, 13?
Yeah, 12 or 13 weeks, yeah.
It's quite a long run.
If only.
No, this is great. No, and we're not doing a show that Sunday of Memorial Day weekend because it is the same day they have the big celebration at the station there at Union Station. So, and we have found in the past that it's kind of just too difficult with the parking.
Yeah, the parking would be impossible.
Yeah, but we do have a special night. Now, you wrote down the night. We're having Greg Oliver, a renowned Kansas City chef, is going to be doing a cooking demonstration before the show. And that is on May what?
May 31st is what I wrote down. Chef Greg Oliver, you must have tickets for the performance that night to attend. So that's May 31st.
And I'm hoping there will be food samples that night.
Mm-hmm. Yes, me as well.
Because I think he'll probably make something quite edible and delicious. Mm-hmm. But Kate,
only slightly better than what I'll probably make.
Slightly better. He would like that. I'm sure. Has he offered you any tips?
Actually, yeah. So there's been a lot of consultation. I mean, it's like, scientifically, we've kind of had to figure out, and we'll really see this week, how it goes with temperature, the timing of everything, what goes in and when, how things have to be cooked with the exact amount of ingredients. So we've done the math for everything. Now we just have to figure out if it really works. But yes, he's been a part of that, as well as our props manager has had a lot to do with that, too. So,
are you and John going to partake of any of this during the act?
During the second act, I do.
Yes.
Yes.
It might give too much away to go into more depth about that. But yes, we do eat during the play.
Relationships, this sounds like an odd one, the difference in ages especially, although that's been overcome by lots of people along the way.
Yeah, and the ideas of what might be fated and what might be chance in this life, because even as we describe this relationship in these two people, one might, from an outsider view, not having read the play or seen it, go, well, why would they have gotten together in the first place? But Hare brings up a lot of lovely questions in the play about fate, chance, what it is that draws us to each other, and why we remain with each other. And that has a lot to do, I think, with their relationship.
Isn't that the case?
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any doubt when you're watching the play, or that the two of them were very deeply and sincerely in love. That wasn't just a flash in the pan sort of thing. It was a really strong connection. And that's sort of the frustration of the play, that
the
you want these two to be together because they're good for each other. You can see that, and they enjoy each other, and they really love each other.
They work well together.
Yes, but it's difficult for them to be together.
Yeah, and as they kind of say over and over again, or at least Kira has said things aren't always that simple. And it's has a lot to do with the relationship of these two in this play as well.
Circumstances change. Yeah. Things evolve.
Yeah. People change. Their ideas change. Oh, yeah.
Personalities even change somehow. And as you evolve as a person, the kind of person you're attracted to often changes. Is that happen here?
Yes, certainly. It's definitely happened more for Kira than it has, I think, for Tom, although they've both changed with some of the situations and problems that have arisen in this play. But Kira, after having left Tom and his life and his family, kind of goes out on her own, has to rediscover herself and, as she says, make a life of her own. And that has informed not only how she lives, but the way she thinks. And that isn't exactly, and I don't think has ever really always been in line with Tom's view of the world, but she's very serious about it now. Yeah. And it's something that they have to come to terms with.
Actors Theater has had a couple of romantic themed shows, the Sea One.
Sea Marks are the one we did in January.
Is that by design? Did you want to go in a more romantic twist?
Well, what we do is we really try to pick pieces that are A, good literature, and B, really focus on the actor. And those plays tend to be sort of relationship-oriented plays. Right. This is, I don't usually get to play this kind of part. This is sort of a modern, contemporary person. Usually I'm having to be kings and warthogs and stuff like that, you know?
Well, that's kind of how we see you. But
as a warthog. Yes.
But that's based on the roles that you've had. In fact, one website even had a lineage chart for you. Have you seen that?
Oh, really? No. Oh my goodness.
My gosh. I have
different parts that you've played.
Oh, dear.
It was on, which one was it? It was on one of the search engines.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, that's so
Bing.
So cool.
It was on Bing.
Really? Wow.
Look yourself up on Bing.
Bing yourself.
I will. But so this is a real treat for me to get to do this kind of part. And it's a very juicy, kind of rich part for an actor to delve into. And that's the kind of plays that we like to pick for Kansas City Actors Theater. Yeah. Some of them are romantic. Is not a coincidence, I think.
Yeah. It had an interesting beginning. Actors Theater. A bunch of you got together.
Yes, I wasn't actually one of the founders, but I came in the third or fourth year of its existence. We're going into our 14th season. This is the last play of our 13th season.
Yeah.
And in August, we start our 14th season with the production of Bly's Spirit by Noel Coward, which will be very exciting. A group of people, working theater professionals, banded together 14 years ago to create their own destiny in a way, to create their own work, to not be at the whim of others who may or may not cast them, who may or may not hire them as designers, to do the administrative work of running a theater pro bono, and for that get the chance to participate in shows that they chose, that they really wanted to work on. That was sort of the artist-led, artist-driven was the original sort of moniker. Now we've changed our moniker to Smart Plays, Great Actors. I may have said that backwards. Great Actors, Smart Plays.
Well, it's true either way you look.
Yeah. Right.
But it gave you an opportunity to learn another side of the business that you knew about. But
well, yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, for me, it's a very personal thing because I've worked at many very large theaters like the Kansas City Rep, and every theater has a major Lord theater, and they're great jobs, but they are all just very large institutions. They have so many people working behind the scenes, which are great jobs, but I was really wanting to do something where all of the money would go to the artist. So I'm willing to, work administratively for free so that we can afford to pay decent salaries to the working artists in this town and try and keep them in this town, keep them from moving off to Chicago and New York, which is a fine thing to do. But I think it really enriches the community to have this band of artists who are committed to living here and working here. I think it really enriches the community. So I'm passionate about that.
And the kind of plays they do are enticing to actors. I mean, not just audiences and being classics and, amazing works of art, but they're enticing to actors. So we want to do them and want to stay.
does Katie have an ideal role? I mean, you don't have to name the person or the show, but a type of character.
Yeah, what do you want to play, Katie?
Gosh, I don't know. Well, this is definitely up there for me. I just feel such a kindred spirit to her, this play. And again, it's just so accessible on so many levels and so fulfilling. Bill Nighy talks about after having first seen it in its first production, its first incarnation, and all the way going home, just skipping home. And that's how I feel every time I leave rehearsal doing this.
I'm skipping.
And you knew I was two blocks from where we were rehearsing, so I just skip all the way home. But you just have that, you have that feeling that reminds you exactly why you started doing this in the first place, because of just these amazing characters and beautiful plays, and you feel like, you know, you're just part of this, you're let in on this big secret again, and it's just the best feeling.
Would you like to sing more?
I do love singing, but I think that as I get older, and certainly in the past couple years, I've started to try to refocus on kind of where I started, where I wanted to start with all of this, and I absolutely love singing. I really can't stress that enough. I love musicals, but I really started off wanting to do plays, theater, and now I'm kind of trying to refocus my efforts into that a little bit as I get older, and I'm finding it's a little bit easier, too, because I'm older. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it gets easier as you get older. Sometimes
yes,
it doesn't.
No.
Does John have a favorite role? I would guess a king out there.
But it's nice to play kings, Michael. Yeah, because it's nice that. Well, I really love playing King Lear, which I did with the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival. That was now three summers ago. I really enjoyed that. I love this role, too. This role is quite good. My favorite role, though, in my whole career was a guy named Dracula. I played Dracula at the then Missouri Repertory in the mid-80s, and then I played it again at the Repertory Theater of St. Louis in the early 90s. And as it turns out, Dracula is coming back into my life in our 14th season for Kansas City Actors Theater in October. We are doing Dracula. And we are doing Dracula as a co-production with the theater department at UMKC, and it will be at the Spencer Theater there on the campus where I performed Dracula some 30 years ago.
Hardly seems possible.
Yeah, well, you know, people say, well, aren't you going to play it again? And I'm like, no, I'm a little too old this time around. But I'm very excited to be directing it, and I love the story so much, and I mean, it's such a great story. So we're really looking forward to that. That's going to be in October.
That'll be in October. Now, you brought it up, so I'll ask. You've done both now. You direct and perform. Sometimes I hear people say, especially as their career evolves, they like to say, you know, I'd like to direct more. I get more fulfillment out of that now than performing.
Well, I tell you, that is normally the answer I would give you. No, and because that's the way I feel. I do enjoy directing, especially when my acting puts me outdoors in 95-degree weather in a park. But then I come across a role like this. My character's name is Tom Sargent in this play, and I really love doing it. So this is like, oh, yeah, I like the acting part maybe better. I mean, I'm more of an actor than a director, but I don't know. This one's throwing
like
me for
this
a loop. Although the first time, Katie and I are still, because it's basically two people, we do a lot of talking in the play, so there are a lot of words. Mm-hmm. We're working very hard to learn the words. We haven't quite learned them all yet. We still have a week and a half. But, you know, there is going to come a moment during the run of the show, I know, where I'm going to forget something, and the panic and sheer terror that sets in when that happens
will create a beautiful moment, I'm sure, between us both.
It will create a beautiful moment, but that's one of the things that leads me to like directing maybe a little bit more than acting.
I would walk over to where she's preparing, and I would just sample a little food.
Thank you, Michael. That's what I'm going to do.
It's like she's just going to start eating, and I'll know I have to figure something out.
Just go, oh, what are you cooking?
Always a good cover.
Thank you for that.
Show opens essentially 3 weeks, as I look here. May the 23rd, a Wednesday through Saturday. No Sunday matinee, because as John pointed out, that is the concert
at the station.
Then we're looking at Tuesday the 29th, through Sunday the 3rd. There will be a matinee on Sunday the 3rd. And then a performance on Monday the 4th at 7:30. That would be industry
That's
night.
That's industry night.
We that like, is actors, actors yes. day off, but you're going to work
but
anyway.
Since we're Kansas City Actors Theater, we like to help those actors be able to see our shows. So we always do a Monday night performance of every show we do.
But then they get a Tuesday off after that.
Yes.
Then Wednesday through Sunday, matinees on Sunday. Actually, two shows on Saturday the 9th, 2 o'clock and 7:30.
Yeah. So to make up for that lost matinee.
That's right.
I'm getting to the age now where I myself, I prefer a matinee to an evening
performance. Oh, right. Yes, yes.
I just had a birthday, so age is on my mind.
We won't interfere with that at all.
No.
3 weeks. The number to call for more information, 816-235-6222. That is the central ticket office number. You probably call it often. I know I read it a lot. Or online at kcactors.org. The performances are at the City Stage Theater at Union Station. By day, the Theater for Young America, and by night,
exactly.
Kansas City Actors Theater.
It's on the lower level, just down at the bottom of the escalators, by the new escape room.
Mm-hmm. And you probably run into a lot of props that you don't know before.
Well, yes, that's true. Oh, you know, City Stage, Union Station just did a great thing. They renovated City Stage. All new seats, new carpet. Because of TYA catering to children as they do, some Cokes maybe had been spilled on the carpet, and it wasn't looking quite as good as it did. But now it's brand new carpet, brand new seats, new lights. This will be the first show Kansas City Actors Theater has done in the renovated theater, so we're excited.
Yeah.
You've been at that stage for a number of years.
Yeah, we've been, yeah, it's been, well, we've always done shows there, but in the past 6 or 7 years, we've started doing all our shows there. So that's.
I want to thank both of my guests for being here today. John Rensenhouse, actor, director, managing. He's not managing director.
No. Chairman John.
Chairman John.
Chairman of the Artistic Committee.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you've seen him many times at the Shakespeare Festival and other places around town. And Katie Carl. Who sings also.
All I also sing.
They're both in the Kansas City Actors Theater production of Skylight, opening on May 23rd and running through June 10th at the City Stage Theater at Union Station. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
Michael.
For being with us. We're going to take a brief break. When we return, we'll see. It might even be a surprise to me as it is to you when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Freeze Frame! Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Can Melissa McCarthy breathe life into a tired comedy formula? Well, she gives it the old college try in Life of the Party. When dumped by her husband, McCarthy decides to go back to school, the same university attended by her daughter. McCarthy and her director husband, Bill Falcone, have no one to blame but themselves for the derivative script, but McCarthy nearly saves the soiree by the sheer force of her personality. Breaking In is yet another movie with an overworked premise. Gabrielle Union stars in this tired thriller about a woman who fights back against home intruders who've taken her two kids hostage. The cast members display two emotions in this movie, anger and boredom. Viewers might feel both. In The House of Tomorrow, Asa Butterfield plays a sheltered teen who lives with Grandma Ellen Burstyn in a Buckminster Fuller geodesic dome. When he finally makes some friends, he discovers the joys of punk rock. While the coming-of-age drama never quite amounts to much, it has some low-watt charm. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the subject of the love letter documentary RBG, an overview of the 84-year-old's public life as an iron-willed liberal jurist and private life as an opera-loving grandma. While the film is never quite as fascinating as its subject, it's an effective primer on her life as well as an engaging valentine to a feminist leader. Also opening this week, Godard Mon Amour is a French comedy that dramatizes the events of 1967 when the famous filmmaker was shooting one of his new wave classics. Gemini is a noir thriller involving a Hollywood starlet, Zoe Kravitz stars. Joaquin Phoenix plays a veteran who tracks down missing girls in the suspense drama You Were Never Really Here. And Margot Robbie and Simon Pegg star in the hired killer drama Terminal. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM. Freeze Frame!
Reverend Norma Gann never felt like she fully fit in the male or female roles emphasized in her Christian upbringing. But she discovered her true gender identity through her Native American heritage.
that destroyed the boundaries that I was raised with. And yet at the same time, it set me free. So free.
We learn what it means to be Two-Spirit on the next Interfaith Voices.
Tuesday at noon, right after Link's Mix.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. KKFI has been around for 30 years now. We just passed the 30-year mark. We've been around a long time, 29 for me, 30 for the station. It's been a long, fun, exciting ride with us to tell us about some events that are coming up to help commemorate this and other things as well is Bill Sundahl. He is the development director here at KKFI. We bother him all the time.
Oh, it's not things. A bother at all. Are you kidding me? I get to work here. This is fantastic.
Is this a fun place to work?
It is a fun place to work. I get to hang out with people like you.
That's right. Well,
yeah. And Dr. Mike was in here a little, you know, like I really have, yes, I love this
no
place.
No one enjoys themselves on the air more than Dr. Mike.
That is true.
If you ducked in here, you would see him relaxing, singing with the music. I probably shouldn't give all this away. Have his feet up on the console.
Oh, playing. No, don't. He doesn't do that, does he?
Yes. Oh. He does. But he enjoys it more than anyone else I know.
It's because he's so good at it, I think. Well, he's just like, he's kicked back. He knows he's great. He just does a good job.
And Bill, this is a good job for Bill. Bill knows the musicians. When the band auctions come, he is at the forefront of all of that. Bill knows music. He's been in bands. He's done a lot of things. And so this is a perfect job, probably.
It really is. No, when Bill Claus was retiring, like, geez, 4 years ago now.
Has it been that long?
I went, that's my job. I just got my job, and I want to get that job. So thank you to the wise people here at KKFI for hiring me, and I love it. So what I would like to let folks know about today is a few events that we have coming up that are fundraisers. So one of which is, as you said, we're celebrating our 30 years on the air, and that we're going to do that Saturday, June 30th at the Folly Theater, which is a beautiful historic theater here in town. And if you haven't been to the Folly Theater, this is a perfect chance for you to educate yourself about the history of Kansas City. That building is in itself I don't know. I love it as far as like a place to see music. I enjoy it quite a bit. So that's why one of the reasons we're doing the show at the Folly. And so it's called KKFI's 30th anniversary. If you go to look it up online, you can find the information at kkfi.org/events. Just go to the website. There's a slider image that pops up. And then so that's got all the information about the show. What we've done is I've gone a little bit crazy and decided to do a show that tries to accurately represent KKFI's programming live on stage. So what we hired two house bands, one of which will be run by Michelle Bacon, who is a musician and a writer and all-around Renaissance woman. But the reason I thought of her as a band leader in this is like she puts together the Band That Fell to Earth, which is a David Bowie cover that's become an annual fundraiser for Midwest Music Foundation. And then Clint Ashlock is the leader of the Kansas City Jazz Orchestra, which is an excellent group of musicians, capturing and continuing the history of jazz here in Kansas City. So basically we're just and then they'll each be backing, each of them will, you know, be sort of taking half the show. And so we're going to have a folk song, a country song, a blues song, a jazz song, a hip-hop song, a reggae song. And so like one song from each of these artists, and we're just going to trek them on through. And then we're going to set up a little on the side of the stage, like an old-timey radio show stage set, and have KKFI DJs come in and introduce the artists. And, you know, you've been listening to so-and-so. Stay tuned for so-and-so. Thanks to our sponsors, etc. And so it's going to be a really fun night of just a great way to get educated about a ton of styles of music. We're trying to get folks from the past and like young folks from the future and from the future. Yes, we're bringing your time traveling people backwards. So So an example, if you maybe you've been listening and you're wondering, well, I wonder who was playing at this show.
how did you get the elders?
Man, that was a super easy one. They were very happy to come and join in. So they're going to sing a song. And then Julia Othmer, who is came up around here and now lives out in California, is coming back to do a song. Sarah Morgan, who travels the planet playing music. Ernie Locke, who is back here in town. And if Ernie's a harmonica player and blues man. Eve Sheldon, who lives in, I don't know the name of the town. It's outside Philly somewhere. Is coming back to do a song. And yeah, so I'm super excited about that. Eve is a fantastic musician. And so if anyone remembers the Elders, Ike Sheldon was in the Elders, and so is now Eve Sheldon has transitioned into herself. And so, I'm very excited. She's phenomenal. Kemet the Phantom, who is a rapper and a singer. I don't know. He's the front man of the Fantastics. So he's going to do a song. Una Walkenhorst, who wrote a song for us for our last collaboration CD. Her father's Bob Walkenhorst, so she and Bob and Enrique Chi of Making Movies got together and wrote a song that was on our last collaboration CD. So she's going to come and perform that song. Bob and Enrique both couldn't. They're touring and weren't able to be in town for this. But so I'm excited about that. The song's called Be Still, and if you have time to look it up online, she's been playing it at shows. There's a really good version of her and her dad singing it together. and it's a great song. Cubanisms is a local group headed up by Michael McClintock. And so he plays the Cuban trace, which is a string instrument somewhere between a guitar and a mandolin or something. Wow. It takes the higher register.
I'm always surprised by the different instruments that people come up with.
This world's full of them, right? I mean, I feel like I personally get limited to I like my rock and roll, I like my R&B, but man, when you expand your view, there's no telling what you'll come into. So that's another reason I love this radio station. I was listening to Tom Crane's show yesterday, I was like, what the heck is that? That's awesome. I'd never heard it before. Kadesh Flow is a rapper, and he is going to be singing. I think he and Kemet are going to do a song together. Brass and Bougie is a group that they're in with Marcus Lewis's big band backing up hip-hop artists. It's pretty sweet. I'll get into that more later because I'm a big fan of Marcus.
Sure.
And then, let's see. Oh, Pablo Sanhueza, who's been playing around town for, since I've been here 15-something years. Gosh, almost 20. But he is the Casey Latin Jazz All-Stars is his group. And Macumba is one of the older projects of that. I think he still does some stuff as Macumba. So he'll be doing some Latin jazz. And Ernest James Zydeco duo. That's Ernest James and Barry Washboard Barnes, who are going to be having a ton of fun. And Joe, who is young. I think she's either 14 or 15, is a sort of a pop artist that has written some really cool stuff. Junebug, Saturday morning, and Jason Vivoni are going to be playing a song together.
And it's Jason's birthday today. If you want to go on Facebook, man. It's Jason's birthday. I don't know how old, and I wouldn't tell anyone.
Well, he's 106. He looks fantastic.
it's his birthday.
Well, happy birthday,
Jason. Wish him birthday,
Jason.
On Facebook. Happy birthday,
that's right.
Jason.
If you don't, maybe you don't listen to Thursdays, but he hosts the Boogie Bridge Thursday.
Gerald Trimble. He has been on this station since the beginning because I remember seeing him around here back in the late 80s.
Definitely has. And he's one of the co-hosts of Global Roots on Sunday afternoon. Another way I get turned on to some crazy cool stuff.
Sure.
And then Robert Rodriguez and Greg Conchola, who are also KKFI programmers. And Bob and Diana Sukiel, also KKFO. There's tons of talent just as radio station DJs. And
many people who are DJs on this station also play.
Yep,
that's
right.
Professionally.
And Rosie's Bar and Grill, who are a folk group, the reason I called them was I found an old flyer. They performed at the very first Midcoast Radio Project fundraiser in 1977. So, and they're still a band. So there's no way we could do this.
KKFI did fundraising long before they got on the air.
If just a quick history, I found this out after working here. It took 11 years of fundraising to get this radio station on the air. I haven't done anything for 11 years that I love already benefiting me. It really boggles my mind and makes me really proud to be a part of this station.
It took a long time to raise enough money because you have to get enough money to build your tower. The FCC required that. Yep. And it took a while to happen.
But
it happened in
I'm so glad that it did.
In 88.
And here you are listening to the benefits of that hard work.
30 years later, hardly seems possible. And this event will, of course, be on Saturday, June the 30th at the Historic Folly Theater
downtown.
That's
correct. And you can find all information and tickets and everything at kkfi.org/events. And that lists all of our fundraising events. Or you can just go straight to the Follies website, follytheater.org. And it's you'll be easy to find there. And yeah, so there's VIP tickets. We're doing a VIP reception from 6 to 7, and then I almost forgot. We're putting together a KKFI history presentation with a founders panel. So we're finding as many founders of the station as we can. It'll be open to questions, and it's gonna be fun.
Thanks so much for dropping by, Bill Sundahl, the director of development for the station. His title changes all the time, so I always have to ask him all the time.
I just keep getting better. So that's right. New titles.
Thanks so much for dropping
by.
Thank you. So I have a surprise guest now, Steve Fizyak, and I would ask baseball questions, but he is now a published author, and he is with us to tell us about a book. The summers are long for you, and I heard you say before in the green room before that you're on the road with the team a lot, so you do a lot of reading, and you came up with this book, didn't you, Steve?
Yes, and it's been a daunting experience because oftentimes you've done one thing for so long, and for 42 years I've been a play-by-play announcer for college football, college basketball, the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, and this is my 33rd year doing Major League Baseball, and the last seven have been with Kansas City, and obviously we saw the cream rise to the top in 2014, 2015, and win a world championship.
It was so exciting.
But because I'm on the road so frequently, I love to read, and I love to read the classics, whether it's Steinbeck or Stegner, and right now I'm reading the Outlander series by Diana Gabaldon, who I think is a terrific writer. And so I've always read, but I've never written. And my wife and I went to Italy in 2006. I visited the town of Lucca, fell in love with it, did some research about it, and so in a sentence, the book is about a spiritual woman helps break down the barriers of two families trying to produce a great Sangiovese wine during Italy's dark times of World War I and the rise of fascism. And I just started writing, and then you get done, and of course, you go back and you go, hey, I wrote a book, and then you read it and you go, oh, this is awful. This is terrible. Well, then you revise and you revise and you revise. And finally, an author friend of mine said, Steve, this is good enough to hire a developmental editor to make it stronger. And I did that. I was telling Maria Velasquez that I hired Nicole Ayers of Ayers Edits, who lives in South Carolina, and she did a fabulous job. She tore it to shreds, and she said, here's what you need to change. I did those things, and I asked her to do another developmental edit for me, and then we put it together, and I said, time to get it out there. So I self-published and just released it about a month and a half ago. I've had good response, very favorable, and it's been a dream, and thankfully the Royals are really supporting me on this. The Glass family is fantastic, and Dan Glass told Toby Cook to, I want to support Steve in this. So they're going to have a book signing at the Royals Hall of Fame in June, right before an Oakland A's game on a Saturday, and then make the book available in the team store, which is wonderful. And I'm so grateful to work for a terrific organization that has such integrity and cares about not only its players on the field, but the employees that work for the Royals.
Well, certainly. Now, if I can backtrack a little, when you travel to Italy with your wife,
yes.
Is this based on actual people?
Oh, some are, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Benito Mussolini, obviously, Giacomo Matteotti, who was the antagonist to Benito Mussolini and who was killed in the early 1920s as Mussolini was rising to power. Roberto Farinacci is an accurate one, some of the mayors of Lucca, etc. The general, Luigi Cadorna, is an accurate figure, but all of my main characters are fictional. Isabella Rosselli is basically this spiritual woman who is born of an unusual faith. A belief in God is found in the ocean, in the air, in the mountains, in the seasons, etc. And then her parents die at the age of 11. She's never heard, she's never read the Bible, she's never heard of Jesus, and she's thrown into a very fundamental convent outside the walls of Lucca called the Passionist Convent. And in my case, I changed the name to the Blessings Convent to protect the innocent. And she comes up with her own faith, because she has this fundamental order that is teaching her. And what they find out is that Isabella can't find God inside a church. She has to find it outside. And when they put her to work in the garden, she flourishes. The tomatoes are redder. The green peppers are fantastic. And she has this gift. She has a green thumb, and she also is a fantastic cook. So the nuns fall in love with her. They become her best friends, help raise her. And it is her path on how she helps those who are struggling in their lives. And that's the correlation I found with team sports. In baseball, as an example, you're going to fail. And that 15 team, we did lose quite a few games, but the guys played for each other. They left their ego in the locker room, and Eric Hosmer played for Salvador Perez, and Salvador Perez played for Mike Moustakas, and Mike Moustakas played for Lorenzo Cain, and Cain played for Gordon, and they all worked so hard together, and amazing things happened. And the same thing is true, I think, whether it's a government, whether it's a community, and in this case, the community of Lucca, Italy. How do these characters who are going through tragedy because of World War I or personal battles, whether it's grief or worries or doubts, etc., how do they come together to form, to produce a great wine? And that's the story.
Yeah. It's amazing. Every time I travel, especially if it's to a foreign country, I'll share 4 years ago, we traveled to the Middle East.
Yes.
Went to Turkey, Israel, Jordan, saw some of the very sites that are in the news even this morning.
Yeah.
Some of those same sites. You're always inspired by that, and you find yourself connecting with it. I mean, I still sign up to some online newsletters of what's happening daily there, even though it's been 4 years since I've been
there.
Do you feel the same way about Italy?
Yes, I do, and even more dramatic was when my wife and I were visiting. I hadn't seen Lucca yet, and we were staying in a bed and breakfast in southern Tuscany and had this vivid dream about a great walled city. And I got up and wrote the outline down, went back to bed, and the next day my wife and I are touring, and I tell her about the story, and she goes, "That's fantastic." Well, we get to Lucca, and I go, "Stacy, this is it. This is the walled city that was in my dream." And when I started researching the history of the walls, I thought, wow, it's fantastic. And there were three walls, and they spent a ton of money. Lucca was at the end of the silk trade and the number two banking capital in all of Europe, so they had a ton of money. And why? When you have a ton of money, you have fears that someone's going to take it away. So they built these walls to defend themselves. Interestingly enough, over 2,000 years, Lucca was never attacked. The walls were never militarily tested. So I came up with that same principle with my characters. Do we also build invisible walls around us to protect us when no one is attacking us? Mm-hmm. And so those are both my protagonists and antagonists struggle with those situations. And the woman who is the main protagonist, Isabella, is a woman of great spiritual conviction, great faith, and is vigilant, and regardless of the disaster and the tragedy that are ripping apart Europe, it never affects her. And that's how she's able to get to the others and help break down their barriers.
Yeah, isn't that a salient point that we just heard Steve make? That we want to achieve wealth, and then when we get it, we're worried that someone's going to take
exactly.
it from us. Isn't that a vicious circle that you may not ever get out of sometimes?
That's why Isabella's line is, live simply, love fully. And because of it, even the people who are rich are a little bit jealous of her. She has nothing. She's a pauper. She's a winemaker. She's a good cook. She's a chef. But there's a joy in her spirit that they see every single day in her eyes, in her heart, in her actions. And regardless of how they treat her, they can't change her. And in the end, she changes them.
Let's. Where can people get your book, Steve? It must be available probably at Royal Stadium.
Well, it's
where can you get it?
Amazon.com, and you just type in Steve Fizioc, The Walls of Lucca, and it will come up. And it's you can purchase the paperback or Kindle. The Kindle is $5. The paperback, $16. But it's been a wonderful experience and, like I said, a daunting experience.
Yeah, I bet so.
Yeah.
And like I said, every time I travel, I find things I connect with, be it cities in the United States. And you travel a lot. So traveling to Italy was just a little further of a plane ride for you.
Well, just as an example, last year, as soon as the season ended, remember, I'm on the road for much of a 6-7 month period, whether it's spring training mm-hmm. or home a week, gone a week, home a week, gone a week. 2 days after we got the season ended, my wife and I got in a plane and we went to France and we toured Paris and Honfleur and Normandy and Mont-Saint-Michel and then on to the white wine country. So it was really fabulous. And I'm just inspired by meeting other cultures and sometimes how they look at the United States. And I've just found fantastic people wherever I go. And my wife and I met in Cincinnati. We've lived in San Francisco and Southern California. And I'm back home in Kansas City. This is where I grew up. And there are great people everywhere. But there's a reason they call this the Heartland. This is a great city with wonderful people and wonderful fans that supported us in 14 and 15. And I hope they'll support this book, The Walls of Lucca.
Oh, I'm sure they will. And I expect the Royals will be back. Sometimes it takes a little reconditioning. That's my word.
Well, I do believe they are a team of integrity, and that starts at the top with the Glass family, with Dayton Moore, with the coaches he hires, and the young men that they select. We did this before. We struggled, but we had this group of young men, Hosmer, Moustakas, Perez, Duffy, Kane, etc., that we put together, and they won at the A-ball level, AA level, and on, and then won a championship. So we're going to do it again. And it's going to, I think we belong to a community that is patient with this team's success. But the great thing is we've done it before, and I do believe we'll do it again.
Sure, I think they will too.
Yeah.
It'll just take a little bit of time. The city is just, oh, what's the right expression? I should be better. The city has been waiting for a winner for so long. If either the Royals or the Chiefs, the Sporting has been very good.
Yes,
they've
won
several championships and cups.
But
they've
remember Dayton Moore took some criticism when he was hired, and he said it's going to take 8 years because he had to rebuild from the ground floor. He had to rebuild our scouting, our development. They rebuilt a complete new complex in the Dominican Republic to find that great talent, and we were able to do that in signing terrific talent like Salvador Perez or Yordano Ventura or Kelvin Herrera. I mean, that takes time. That takes work. And they knew, and quite frankly, I believe Dayton predicted 2014. And, of course, the fans, they didn't want to hear that. They wanted to be good tomorrow. They had been through all of this, all of these struggles. But Dayton knew the right path, and he was vigilant, and he stayed through it with great discipline, and the Glass family stayed with him as well and with our organization. And to see what we did in 14-15 was really awesome.
Sure.
And
just think, look how the city turned out at that Union Station celebration.
Yeah.
That was just amazing.
And but for a guy who's been in the business for so long to see young people care for each other like they did and lack ego, our starting staff, all they wanted to do was get it to a remarkable, ridiculously remarkable bullpen, and we were going to get a tie game or the lead to that remarkable bullpen and would find the success, and we did.
They were remarkable.
Yeah.
They really were. Now, Steve is going to be on Maria's program Wednesday during the noon hour, mm-hmm. same as this program, but only on Wednesday. You'll be on once again to talk about your book. Once again, the title is?
The Walls of Lucca.
And it's available through Amazon.com. Any other places as well?
Not right now because I'm on KDP Select, which is through Amazon, and so I'm controlled for like a 3-month period, which is fine. And they've been very, very helpful for me, and it's beginning to take off a little bit, which is really sweet. And I've had some good responses to the book, and I'm very happy about that. But like I said, I've done one thing for four decades. and I was a little afraid of getting it out there, and I've had some good response.
You're a Renaissance man. Thanks so much for dropping by.
Thank you very much.
Again, he'll be on Maria's program on Wednesday sometime between the 12 and 1 o'clock hour, just like you are. KKFI has talk shows during the week. So between 12 noon and 1 o'clock on Maria's program this Wednesday,
yes.
Steve will be on once again.
I'm very thankful for you having me on. Appreciate it.
It's nice to meet you. Steve Fizyak, one of the voices of the Kansas City Royals.
Yes.
We've enjoyed hearing his play-by-play for several years. Now, they have quite a team of announcers. They do
yes,
a good job.
Yes, we do. I mean, Denny Matthews is the Hall of Famer. Ryan Lefevre is fantastic, and I've wanted to work with Ryan for a very, very long time. And Rex Hudler is one of my best friends in the business. We work together with the Angels. Steve Stewart, Joel Goldberg, Jeff Montgomery. We've got a great production staff. That's the thing I'm most proud of, is that all of us get along so well, from the guys in the truck to the guys in the broadcast booth. We really enjoy each other's company. And let me also put in Keith Kowalski, who is our producer engineer. He's a great guy as well.
Okay, thank you for dropping by, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. The Jazz Insider is coming up next. Great jazz. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next, we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road. I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.